Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 410th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, BC, Canada, North America, the world.
That's great. I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and the director of program and practice support at the College of Family Physicians of Canada and a professor at the University of Alberta. And today, again, we are calling in Adrian, who James quite cruelly commented that she lives in Red Deer and that it's cold there 12 months of the year. That's just not true. For 2 months of the year, you are coated in a warm blanket of mosquitoes. Yes.
Absolutely.
So it's quite cozy.
And I think the topic that we're going to talk about is very appropriate, depression.
You bet. Perfect for this time of year.
Which is everybody in where you live.
And Adrian, can you just introduce yourself again for the listeners?
You bet. So I'm Adrian Lindblad. I'm the Knowledge Translation and Evidence Coordinator for the Alberta College of Family Physicians and Associate Clinical Professor with the Department of Family Medicine at the University of Alberta.
And today we're going to talk, we've talked a lot about antidepressants in the past, but the question that you guys were looking at was, how effective are antidepressants for treating depression in the elderly? Because it's clearly an issue. But some of the issues are, you know, we always have concerns about using, you know, pounds and pounds of numerous medications in the elderly. So, and a lot of people who are elderly can get depressed. And we just want to know, is there any evidence that these antidepressants work?
Absolutely.
And a couple other background pieces, of course, there's also anxiety, right? As we get older and we're, especially when we get left alone and we have poor access and we're feeling isolated, that anxiety creeps up. And although we're not talking specifically about anxiety as treatment, there is a strong advocacy for antidepressants in lieu of anything like a benzodiazepine or anything like that. So this didn't ask that specific question, but it's in broader thinking. It's just, how effective are the antidepressants, first of all, in depression, which they're targeted for? So when this topic came up, I was feeling like I couldn't add it onto my plate, but I did kindly request that Adrian take this over. So Adrian, feel free to blame me for this, but I think it is a very important question.
And I do blame you for this one, Mike, because this one was extremely challenging. I've looked at some depression evidence a little bit before, and this one was kind of a whole new kettle of fish. And we'll get into some of why that is, because I was possibly cursing Mike's name frequently, which actually I do a lot at work anyway. But in this case, it was possibly more than usual. So one of the reasons this is so tricky is because of, how do you define elderly? And all of the systematic reviews that I looked at took a different approach to it. So some would say they'd only include RCTs if they include patients over age 60. And some said they'd only include if patients were over age 65. And they, even within that, they would totally change the numbers they were looking at again. So there was one where they said, well, late life is mean age of about 70. Older, the mean age is 73, and that this was the same systematic review that just divided the numbers very differently. So it made it really tricky to try and make sense of any of this. So I'm hoping that today we can try to clarify what the bottom line really is. So there were five randomized placebo-controlled trials that I found really from the last 10 years. Like I said, they all use different ages for inclusion, but I'll kind of go through each systematic review and talk about what they found. So the first one looked at all different types of antidepressants. The mean age was around 70. And in this case, the studies were quite short. They were followed mostly for only 4 weeks, although the range went up to 20 weeks. And then the main outcome that they looked at was what they called recovery. And that could be really dependent on what the randomized controlled trial defined recovery as. So it could be looking at a predetermined depression score and saying you have to reach a certain score to determine recovery, or it was a set change in that score that you had to reach to be recovered. So it was really quite variable. They then broke it down into looking at TCAs or looking at SSRIs. And if you look at the TCAs, there was 10 RCTs, and the rate of recovery was about 75% with the TCAs compared to 51% for placebo, with a number needed to treat of about 5. if you look at the SSRIs now, there was only two RCTs. In this case, recovery rates were 83% for the drugs and 72% for placebo, which is a number needed to treat of 10. So what's really interesting about this one for me is how high that placebo response rate was at 72%. A lot of other antidepressant trials, so I mentioned with the TCAs, it was around 50%. If you're looking at antidepressants in other age groups, recovery, depending how it's defined, can be around 30 to 50%. So that 72% seems really high.
Yeah, I was going to say it's hard to get much better than 72. I mean, that's, you know, fairly impressive. But I think you're exactly right, Adrian. I mean, that's typically the placebo group response that you see in the depression trials is around, you know, anywhere from 30 to 50%. And that exactly, which is basically exactly what was seen with the tricyclic antidepressants.
Yeah.
And interestingly, the SSRI response in the placebo group is better than the drug treatment response in most depression trials.
Exactly.
Yes.
And which is why I think, given that sort of data, is why many people believe that these drugs do have an effect, because people get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that's the tricky part about it. And now, unfortunately, I would bet that there were no head-to-head comparisons between TCAs and SSRIs, because that would be a really interesting study, because it looks, you know, from this that it's, you know, the tricyclic antidepressants, to use a relative thing, are twice as good, because they get, you know, a 24% difference versus about a 10% difference.
Mm-hmm. There was a different Cochrane review that tried to look at some of that in other age groups of TCAs versus SSRIs, and they found the efficacy was fairly similar between them, although tolerability is a little different with more withdrawals actually for side effects with TCAs at 24% versus 17% for SSRIs. But that was not limited to elderly,
right,
depending how you define it. Okay, another systematic review looked at SSRIs and what they called newer antidepressants, so really no TCAs. They had 10 RCTs. In this case, the mean ages of the studies ranged from 68 to 80, and they were followed for 6 to 12 weeks. This time, they defined response as a greater than 50% improvement in symptoms, and they found 44% of people on antidepressants had a response compared to 35% on placebo, so much more in line with numbers we'd kind of expect. The results were quite inconsistent, though. The studies were quite heterogeneous in terms of the amount of efficacy that they saw, but the trend generally did follow improvement being with the antidepressants. And if we look at remission rates, again, remission was highly variable in terms of how it was defined, but it was 33% for the drugs versus 27% on placebo. And again, results quite heterogeneous and inconsistent across the board.
And so those results are very similar to, like you said, what you'd see in the general population.
Absolutely. Yeah. Much more in line.
Yeah. Because if I remember from the stuff that we've looked at previous, we're looking at around, and it depends on the severity of the depression, but about a 10% additional benefit on top of whatever the placebo group response is.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. And then we come to another systematic review. This one was any antidepressant, 15 RCTs, mean follow-up was about 7 weeks. They looked at response with being about a 50% improvement in symptoms. And what they did in this case was they actually tried to do different subgroups looking at age. So I kind of alluded to this one at the start. So in this case, in your typical adult population, where the mean age was 44, about 54% of patients had a response. Once you got down to looking at patients with a mean age of 73, the response rate was 42%. So it decreased by about 12% as you got older. But the placebo response rates actually stayed the same in all of the studies, regardless of age, at around 39%, somewhere in there. So it was really just the response rates for the drugs that seemed to go down a bit. They also did a post hoc analysis, and they limited it just looking at studies for people over age 65, and they found no difference from placebo in terms of overall response rates. So a little different kind of than what we've seen from some of the other systematic reviews that found it was statistically better.
Yeah, it is different.
Yeah. It is different.
And that's very depressing, because it's so tricky. And I would suggest that these different systematic reviews, many of them would have used some of the same studies.
It's not
consistent. I mean, because they're pulling from the same database, if you will, of studies, but it depends on your inclusion and exclusion criteria and all that sort of stuff. And so it's always tricky when you're trying to do, and exactly what you guys said in this, the tools of practice, when it's a secondary analysis of data.
Yeah, so absolutely. They often used some of the same studies, but a lot of these were secondary analyses. So they would take the randomized control trial and only look at patients from those studies over a certain age range. So depending on how they defined their inclusion criteria, you could end up with different data from each of the RCTs because they only looked at patients of a certain age. So it makes this whole thing very, very tricky to find out exactly what the truth is. There was also one other systematic review looking at SSRIs only. In this case, it was 12 RCTs. The mean ages ranged from 70 to 79, and they followed patients mostly for about 8 weeks. They looked at both response and remission rates, and in this case found no differences at all compared to placebo.
Well, now we were all confused.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's... Because, you know, you've got these, you know, each one of these systematic reviews will sort of suggest that they are the systematic review of choice for these sorts of things. And, you know, often it's often systematic reviews will give different results depending on what trials they include. I mean, one of these only had SSRIs, so it obviously excluded TCA trials, and then some of them combine SSRIs with tricyclic. It gets very confusing, and that's why you really have to look at it. Look at exactly what these systematic reviews looked at. So, but is there, when you guys see this sort of data, how do you deal with this sort of different, results?
Well, it's quite interesting. The first thing I do is I bang my head against a wall for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And that makes me feel a lot better.
Good, yeah.
When you wake up, you feel a lot better.
I feel better, yeah. I curse Mike's name a lot. That always works really well, too. But that's just the tricky part, is trying to then go through and find out what some of the similarities are, what are some of the trends when you're looking at it. So looking at something, for example, like just looking across the board at what some of the response rates were. And how does that align with other literature that we have? And what are some of these differences due to? Is it due to differences in placebo response rate? Is it a true effect on age? There are so many different factors that could be. But when I look at overall, when I look at the general consistencies among it, I think that, okay, the evidence is inconsistent. The efficacy may decrease as patients get older. But there are definitely some studies showing that there is a benefit as well. So I look at that and I think, okay, well, what are some of the reasons people might have depression in some of these studies? And that's kind of a big question for me, because when we're talking about the elderly population, there often could be other things going on. There could be chronic illnesses going on. They could be frail. They could be dealing with the loss of a number of friends and family or loss of independence and a lot of other things that could be contributing, and that maybe an antidepressant isn't necessarily the best choice in those people, because it is a slightly different reason for feeling depressed than it might be in a different patient.
Yeah, but sort of chronic illnesses and having tragedies in one life is not just limited to elderly patients, as I'm sure you know.
No,
but so it's very important to take that part of it into account when we're talking about using antidepressants, because it's always tricky to know where to do it. But you know, when I look at these results, they don't look that dissimilar to what we see with people who are not, you know, in quotation marks, elderly. Mm-hmm. You know, the evidence is just not quite as consistent. But what is reasonably consistent is that, you know, anywhere from 35 to, you know, maybe 50 or 60% of people who are given placebo get better. And that's a really important number to remember. And we've talked about this in previous podcasts, right, Mike? That placebo. Yep. And it's not necessarily the placebo effect. It's very important to realize that. It's just that people do get better.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. So okay, Adrian, go ahead. Sorry, I was
going to... I was just say one other factor that might be related to this is that there was a different systematic review that kind of looked at how long it takes elderly patients to respond to antidepressants. And it suggested anyway that elderly patients might take a little bit longer to respond to antidepressants than younger adults. In this case, they actually suggested it might take 10 to 12 weeks before you can see any effects. And a lot of these studies were quite short. So the first systematic review I mentioned, most of the studies were 4 weeks long. The last one with SSRIs only were 8 weeks long. So are we even following it long enough to see a true difference between the drug and placebo? I'm not sure.
Mike, you were going to say something.
Yeah, this is a common problem, though, right? The antidepressant trials are notorious for kind of having a 4 to 8 week duration, mm-hmm. And then they just continue that on. And it took us forever to figure out that 50% of people are getting some response at 1 week in kind of the traditional adult population. Mm-hmm. And so for us to figure this out in the elderly population, how long it takes them, you know, given the limits you've described in the data, we might never actually get close to knowing. It's, I would say, the data on for adults and knowing that it happens earlier than we used to think is somewhat reassuring. Now I would say the data is getting pretty good, but this we're really, and this comes a bit into to why I thought this was a reasonable topic and why I did tell you that this was going to be horrible.
Yeah, you did.
But I wanted someone else to do it, in part because I'm quite biased. And it comes to my history. I was a resident at the time. And I was doing my psychiatric rotation and we all had to do a presentation. And I was doing some geriatric psych and the preceptor said to me, "Mike, I hear you like evidence." And I was only mildly interested, maybe a little bit more than the average resident. And they said, "We'd like you to do this paper because it's so, you know, we just think it's groundbreaking." And he talked very, very positively about it. And I remember getting handed it, stuffing it in my bike bags because I was cycling, going home, pulling it out, reading it, and realizing there were 17 people in the whole study. Wow. And then as I read through it, they had subgroup analysis of those 17 people. Now, don't forget, you randomize them and 8 and 9 are in a group. And so in some of the subgroups, there was one patient and they had confidence intervals around that one patient. And I thought this study was terrible. And I remember going back to present on it and saying, "I don't think you can make any decisions from this." not that you should make large decisions or change your practice, but this does nothing.
And then where did you go to, you know, when they, to your other residency that they put you in?
Well, I remember they were kind of flummoxed. They were like, "Really? So it's not that good." Mm. And I am 90% sure that it was handed to them by a drug rep. Yeah. So, and then just passed off to me because I don't want to actually read the darn thing. Here, give it to this resident.
So now you're doing the same to Adrian.
Exactly.
But I think there's some useful messages that do come out of here because, and we talked about this in the previous podcast when we talked about this issue, not the elderly, but just in depression, is that if you give an antidepressant to a person and they get better, chances are it has nothing to do with the drug. You know, because if you're looking, you know, even in the most the numbers needed to treat, you know, with the first one you talked about, Adrian, the tricyclic antidepressants, where there was a 75% improvement in the drug, in the medication group, and 51% in the placebo. So in other words, of the 3/4 who got better, 2/3 of those, so 50% of the 75% got better, and they were just the placebo group. So you're still looking at, if you got better, there's a 2/3 chance it had nothing to do with the medication. And so it's really important to realize that that's the case. I think everyone should be thrilled that people are feeling less depressed or maybe not depressed at all. But you've got to reevaluate on a regular basis. And that's always tricky because why would someone feels, I feel a lot better, I don't want to take the chance of stopping the medication. But then we run into the problems of, you know, using lots of medications in the elderly. And I would be very remiss, Mike, if I didn't mention, maybe we should be starting with definitely lower doses in these guys. I know. It's going to depress you.
What time is it?
Yeah. But even if you don't want to start with lower doses, if you get a response, your next step should probably be to cut back on the dose. You know, it's
starting at a lower dose. Lower dose. The first response is to cut back on the dose.
No, if you start with the regular doses, then you cut back.
Okay.
But it's really tricky to know what to do.
And the conversation is tricky. You take the TCA example that you gave with 75 and 50. Do you then, so the patient's feeling better, do you then go and say, "Look, you know, you're getting better, but there's a fair chance this is the placebo effect." And I would go out on a limb here and say describing the difference between the placebo group effect and the placebo effect is going to be difficult.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And many patients associate responding to placebo as some kind of weakness that they got suckered in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if that is not depressing, what is it? So it's a tricky conversation,
but you could, you're always Mr. Negative, or should I say Dr. Negative? I never know what to say.
I'm the ray of sunshine.
How are you?
Because I would, if someone was feeling better on one of these agents, well, I would look at withdrawing them at the appropriate time, etc. I would revel in that success.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
I would take all the accolades possible, of course. Well, you're better because of me.
Yeah. But you could say.
But I would be very enthusiastic and positive. So.
Oh yeah, and as one should be, because the patient is feeling better, or they are feeling better. But you could say, but you know what? One of our concerns is maybe some things have changed for you. Maybe you're doing more things. Maybe you are getting better on your own, which is really impressive. And we need to figure that out at some point. Maybe not right now. And maybe you're not ready to do that. But here's an approach, what we could do. Now, if they're not tolerating the medication very well,
absolutely,
that's a different story. Then there's a much better argument for that. And that's why I would be a big fan of saying, we don't know if it is, but let's leave it for a while. But in a while, we could just, cut the dose in half, or you could take it every 2 days. And you tell me whether or not you think it's that, because, boy, wouldn't it be great if maybe you just don't have whatever the reasons for the depression, maybe they're gone now. Who knows? It's the art of medicine, if you will.
Yeah, it's very tricky.
Yeah.
It's very tricky. And we all, it's not that, we like to joke, but it's not that what you're saying, the way you summarize it there, is not completely appropriate. It's just, it's always tricky. And we know that for people in the studies where you look at responders to antidepressants and you later withdraw them early, like 8 weeks or something like that, we know that you increase the chance of relapse by about the size of the treatment effect and et cetera. So this whole thing is it needs to be balanced, and so many features go into it. What was the severity of the depression? What else is happening for the patient? All of the things, some of the things you indicated, but a lot of, there's so many parts to the decision-making process that all become relevant here. It might have been that you were helping, that this has helped get off benzodiazepines or a reliance on them for anxiety in the evening or something like that. And there's all sorts of reasons for these kind of interventions, and environments do change. The time to try a withdrawal is not also the time where you've made the decision that maybe we need to curtail your driving or something, because that we know how stressful that is. There's always a thousand things.
And I think you guys would agree with me, there is no doubt that I don't even know what the number would be, but there is no doubt that SSRIs, there is a withdrawal syndrome associated with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they can be hard to get off. Some people are do wonderfully, and they can taper off something as difficult as venlafaxine quite quickly. Mm-hmm. But there are others with even fluoxetine, which is supposed to be the easiest or among the easiest. There's patients who really, really struggle coming off it. And then you're left with is this a return of their mood disorder or anxiety, what have you, or is this a withdrawal symptom? It's the same thing we talked about, the effectiveness of PPIs. Well, one of the challenges is when you try and come off a PPI, people have rebound GERD.
Yeah.
Even if you never had a PPI, even if you never had symptoms of GERD, but we put you on a PPI, a number of patients taken off it will then develop rebound GERD. So these things are real, and it does make for a challenge in sorting it out. For sure.
And it's about, just if people are interested, with the PPIs, it's about a 10% chance of getting heartburn when you didn't have it in the first place if you got put it on. And this was a cool study. Remember, Mike? They gave it to people who had nothing. Really cool trial. They said, let's see what happens if we give a bunch of people who don't have heartburn PPIs and then try and get them off it. I mean, it's a great...
We would be remiss, James, if we didn't bring up the study that gave men who claimed not to have erectile dysfunction, gave them sildenafil.
I've not heard that trial. I mean, is that
yes,
the trial?
Yes, you have. You presented on it.
No, I don't think I did.
Years ago.
Did I?
Yeah. You called it groundbreaking.
I don't know whether that was... Well, yeah. That was a trial that you were involved with as a patient, right?
Of course, you'll go there, Adrian. Back to you to take us into reality again.
I'm not sure I even know what we're talking about anymore.
Well, let me help you. So the bottom line is, it looks like that antidepressants in the elderly, however you define that, there's some evidence of an effect somewhat similar to what we see in people who are not being defined as elderly. But as with every aspect of this, we have to make sure we look at whether or not there are chronic illnesses or other reasons for the depression. And then we have to be also very sensitive to the fact that people do get adverse events from these agents, and especially in the elderly, they're associated with confusion and falls and all those sorts of different things. And I think it's important to mention, and you guys mentioned it in the Tools for Practice, is none of this, we're not talking about the elderly who have dementia.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of a whole other kettle of fish, the elderly who have dementia. And you guys can probably speak about that more than me, but I know there's all kinds of other issues about how difficult it is to actually diagnose depression in those patients as well. And other things, is it apathy? Is it something else that's going on? But we do have a decent systematic review that looked at that specific issue and found that antidepressants don't seem to do anything in those people.
Yeah.
And then I think the last piece, James, to summarize is that age may be playing a factor in the response to antidepressants. It may decline with age, but that data and the duration at which it takes to actually show a response is potentially also longer. So those are some relatively important clinical points to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, for sure. So I think that the only thing we need to sell is the Best Science Medicine course in Vancouver, May 3 and May 4. You can go to the to our website. There are links there for where to register and how to sign up for the course. And we would love it if you would attend. Vancouver is usually very nice in the middle of May, the beginning of May. So May 3 and May 4, we'd love it if you'd attend. We've got the whole schedule. You can click on, you'll see who's presenting and what the topics are. And it's our 30th anniversary, so we would love it if you would show up. Anything else, Mike?
And just mentioning that the National College, the College of Family Physicians of Canada, we are ongoing producing webinars at a monthly basis. I'm not entirely sure when this podcast is coming out for you, the listener. And so we'll just say that keep your eyes peeled for the next webcast.
Okay, sounds great. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.